Year of Glad. I am seated in an office, surrounded by heads and bodies. My posture is consciously congruent to the shape of my hard chair. This is a cold room in university administration, wood-walled, Remington-hung, double-windowed against the November heat, insulated from administrative sounds by the reception area outside, at which Uncle Charles, Mr. DeLint, and I were lately received. I am in here. Three faces have resolved into place above summer weight sports coats and half Windsors across a polished pine conference table, shiny with the spidered light of an Arizona noon. These are the three deans of admissions, academic affairs, athletic affairs. I do not know which face belongs to whom. I believe I appear neutral, maybe even pleasant, though I've been coached to err on the side of neutrality and not attempt what would feel to be like, what would feel to me like a pleasant expression or smile. I have committed to crossing my legs. I hope carefully, ankle on knee, hands together in the lap of my slacks. My fingers are mated into a mirrored series of what manifests to me as the letter X. The interview room's other personnel include the university's director of composition, its varsity tennis coach, and academy promoter, Mr. A. DeLint. CT is beside me. The others sit, stand, and stand, respectively, at the periphery of my focus. The tennis coach jingles pocket change. There is something vaguely digestive about the room's odour. The high traction sole of my complimentary night sneaker runs parallel to the wobbling loafer of my mother's half-brother, here in his capacity as headmaster, sitting in the chair to what I hope is my immediate right, also facing the deans. The dean at left, a lean, yellowish man, whose fixed smile nevertheless has the impermanent quality of something stamped into uncooperative material, is a personality type I've lately come to appreciate. The type who delays need of any response from me by relating my side of the story for me, to me. Past a packet of computer sheets by the shaggy lion of a dean at centre, he is speaking more or less to these pages, smiling down. You are Harold Incandenza, 18. Date of secondary school graduation, approximately 1 month from now. Attending the Enfield Tennis Academy, Enfield, Massachusetts. A boarding school, where you reside. His reading glasses are rectangular, court-shaped, the sidelines at top and bottom. You are, according to Coach White and Dean, unintelligible, a regionally, nationally, and continentally ranked junior tennis player, a potential O-N-A-N-C-A-A athlete of substantial promise, recruited by Coach White via correspondence with Dr. Travis here commencing February this year. The top page is removed and brought round neatly to the bottom of the sheaf at intervals. You have been in residence at the Enfield Tennis Academy since age 7. I am debating whether to risk scratching the right side of my jaw where there is a when. Coach White informs our offices that he holds the Enfield Tennis Academy's programme and achievements in high regard, that the University of Arizona's tennis squad has profited from the prior matriculation of several former ETA alumni, one of whom was Mr. Aubrey F. DeLint, who appears to be with you here today. Coach White and his staff have given us the yellow administrator's usage is on the whole undistinguished, though I have to admit he's made himself understood. The director of composition seems to have more than the normal number of eyebrows. The Dean at right is looking at my face a bit strangely. Uncle Charles is saying that though he can anticipate the Deans might be predisposed to weigh what he avers as coming from his possible appearance a kind of cheerleader for ETA, he can assure the assembled Deans that all this is true, and that the Academy has presently in residence no fewer than a third of the continent's top 30 juniors in age brackets all across the board, and that I here, who go by Hal usually, am right up there among the very cream. Right and centre Deans smile professionally. The heads of Delint and the coach incline as the Dean at left clears his throat. Belief that you could well make, even as a freshman, a real contribution to this university's varsity tennis programme. We are pleased, he either says or reads, removing a page, that a competition of some major sort here has brought you down and given us a chance to sit down and chat together about your application and potential recruitment and matriculation and scholarship. I've been asked to add that Hal here is seeded third boys 18 and under singles in the prestigious Whataburger Southwest Junior Invitational out at the Randolph Tennis Centre, says what I infer is the athletic affairs, his cocked head showing a freckled scalp. Out at Randolph Park, near the outstanding Elkhorn Marriott, CT inserts, a venue the whole contingent's been vocal about finding absolutely top hole thus far, which, just so Chuck. And that, according to Chuck here, Hal has already justified his seed. He's reaching the semi-finals as of this morning, apparently impressive win, and that he'll be playing out at the centre again tomorrow against the winner of a quarter-final game tonight. And so we'll be playing tomorrow, I believe, scheduled for 08:30. Just try to get underway before the god-awful heat out there, though of course a dry heat. And has apparently already qualified for this winter's Continental Indoors up at Edmonton, Kirk tells me, cocking further to look up and left at the varsity coach, whose smile's teeth are radiant against a violet sunburn. Which is something indeed, he smiles, looking at me. Did we get that all right, Hal? CT has crossed his arms casually. Their triceps flesh is webbed with mottle in the air-conditioned sunlight. You sure did, Bill, he smiles. The two halves of his moustache never quite match. And let me say, if I may, that Hal's excited to be invited for the third year running to the Invitational again, to be back here in a community he has real affection for, to visit with your alumni and coaching staff, to have already justified his high seed in the week's not unstiff competition, to, as they say, still be in it without the fat woman in the Viking hat having sung, so to speak. But of course, most of all, to have a chance to meet you gentlemen and have a look at the facilities here. Everything here is absolutely top slot from what you see. There is silence. Delint shifts his back against the room's panelling and re-centres his weight. 62.5% of the room's faces are directed my way, pleasantly expectant. My chest bumps like a dryer with shoes in it. I compose what I project will be seen as a smile. I turn this way, then that, slightly, sort of directing the expression to everyone in the room. There is a new silence. The yellow Dean's eyebrows go circumflex. The two other Deans look to the director of composition. The tennis coach has moved to stand at the broad window, feeling at the back of his crew cut. Uncle Charles strokes his forearm above his watch. Sharp, curved palm shadows move slightly over the pine table's shine, the one's head a shadow of a black moon. Is Hal all right, Chuck? Athletic Affairs asks. Hal just seemed to, grimace. Is he in pain? Are you in pain, son? How's writer's rain? Smiles my uncle, soothing the air with a casual hand. Just a bit of, let's call it, maybe a facial tick, slightly. All the adrenaline of just being here on your impressive campus, justifying his seed so far without dropping a set, receiving that official written offer of not only waivers but a living allowance from Coach White here on Pac-10 letterhead, being ready in all probability to sign a national letter of intent right here and now, this very day, he's indicated to me. CT looks at me, his look horribly mild. I do the safe thing, relaxing every muscle in my face, emptying out all expression. I stare carefully into the Herculean knot of the middle dean's necktie. My silent response to the expectant silence begins to affect the air of the room, the bits of dust and sport coat lint stirred around by the AC's vents, dancing jaggedly in the slatted plane of window light, the air over the table like a sparkling space just above a fresh-poured seltzer. The coach, in a slight accent neither British nor Australian, is telling CT that the whole application interface process, while usually just a pleasant formality, is probably best accentuated by letting the applicant speak up for himself. Right and centre deans have inclined together in soft conference, forming a kind of teepee of skin and hair. I presume it's probably facilitate that the tennis coach mistook for accentuate, though accelerate, while clunkier than facilitate, is from a phonetic perspective more sensible as a mistake. The dean with the flat yellow face has leaned forward, his lips drawn back from his teeth in what I see as concern. His hands come together on the conference table's surface. His own fingers look like they mate as my own 4X series dissolves and I hold tight to the sides of my chair. We need candidly to chat three potential problems with my application, they and I, he is beginning to say. He makes a reference to candour and its value. The issues my office faces with the application material on file from you, Hal, involve some test scores. He glances down at a colourful sheet of standardised scores in the trench his arms have made. The admission staff is looking at standardised test scores from you that are, as I'm sure you know and can explain, are, shall we say, subnormal. I'm to explain. It's clear that this really pretty sincere yellow dean at left is admissions, and surely the little Avarian figure at right is athletics, and then, because the facial creases of the shaggy middle dean are now pursued in a kind of distance to front, and I'm eating something that makes me really appreciate the presence of whatever I'm drinking along with it, look, that spells professional academic reservations. An uncomplicated loyalty to standards, then, at centre. My uncle looks for athletics, as if puzzled. He shifts slightly in his chair. The incongruity between admissions, hand and face colour is almost wild. Verbal scores that are just quite a bit closer to zero than we're comfortable with, as against a secondary school transcript from the institution where both your mother and her brother are administrators. Reading directly out of the sheaf inside his arm's ellipse. That this past year, yes, has fallen off a bit, but by the word I mean fallen off to, but by the word I mean fallen off to outstanding from three previous years of frankly incredible, off the charts. Most institutions do not even have grades of A with multiple pluses after it, says the director of composition, his expression impossible to interpret. This kind of, how shall I put it, incongruity, admission says, his expression frank and concerned, I've got to tell you, sends up a red flag of potential concern during the admissions process. We thus invite you to explain the appearance of incongruity, if not outright shenanigans. Students has a tiny, piping voice. That's absurd, coming out of a face this big. Surely, by incredible, you mean very, very, very impressive, as opposed to literally, quote, incredible. Surely, says CT, seeming to watch the coach at the window, massaging the back of his neck. The huge window gives out on nothing more than dazzling sunlight and cracked earth with heat shimmers over it. Then there is before us the matter of not the required 2, but 9 separate application essays, some of which of nearly monograph length, each without exception being, different sheet, the adjective various evaluators used was, quote, stellar. Director of composition, I made in my assessment deliberate use of lapidary and effete. But in areas and with titles, I'm sure you recall quite well, Hal. Neoclassical assumptions in contemporary prescriptive grammar. The implications of post-Fourier transformations for holographically mimetic cinema. The emergence of heroic status in broadcast entertainment. Montague Grammar and the Semantics of Physical Modality. A man who began to suspect he was made of glass. Tertiary symbolism in Steinian erotica. Now showing the broad expanse of recessed gum. Suffice to say, there's some frank and candid concern about the recipients of these unfortunate test scores, though perhaps explainable test scores, being these essays' sole individual author. I'm not sure, Hal's sure, just what's being implied here, my uncle says. The dean at centre is fingering his lapels as he interprets distasteful computed data. What the university is saying here is that from a strictly academic point of view, there are admissions problems that Hal needs to try and help us iron out. A matriculant's first role at the university is, and must be, as a student. We couldn't admit a student we had reason to suspect can't cut the mustard, no matter how much of an asset he might be on the field. Dean Sawyer means the court, of course, Chuck. Athletic Affairs says, head severely cocked, so he's including the white person behind him in the address somehow, not to mention ONA, NCAA regulations, and investigators always snuffling around for some sort of whiff of the smell of impropriety. The varsity tennis coach looks at his own watch. Assuming these board scores are accurate reflections of true capacity in this case, Academic Affairs says, his high voice serious and subtle, still looking at the file before him, as if it were a plate of something bad. I'll tell you right now, my opinion is it wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be fair for the other applicants. Wouldn't be fair to the university community. He looks at me. And it'd be especially unfair to Hal himself, admitting a boy we see simply as an athletic asset. Would amount to just using the boy. We're under myriad scrutiny to make sure we're not using anybody. Your board results, son, indicate we could be accused of using you. Uncle Charles is asking Coke White to ask the Dean of Athletic Affairs whether the weather overscores would be as heavy if I were, say, a revenue-raising football prodigy. The familiar panic at feeling misperceived is rising, and my chest bumps and thumps. I expend energy on remaining utterly silent in my chair, empty. My two eyes, two great pale zeros. People have promised to get me through this. Uncle CT, though, has the pinched look of the cornered. His voice takes on an odd timbre when he's cornered, as if he were shouting as he receded. Hal's grades at ETA, which I should stress is an academy, not simply a camp or factory, accredited by both the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and the North American Sports Academy Association, its focus on the total needs of the player and student, founded by a towering intellectual figure whom I hardly need name here, and based by him on the rigorous Oxbridge Condorvarium Trivivarium curricular model, a school fully staffed and equipped by a fully certified staff, should show that my nephew here can cut just about any Pac-10 mustard that needs cutting, and that... The lint is moving towards the tennis coach, who is shaking his head. Would be able to see a distinct flavour of minor sports prejudice about this whole thing, CT says, crossing and recrossing his legs as I listen, composed and staring. The room's carbonated silence is now hostile. I think it's time to let the actual applicant speak out on his own behalf, Academic Affairs says, very quietly. This seems somehow impossible with you here, sir. Athletics smiles tiredly under a hand that massages the bridge of his nose. Maybe you'd excuse us for a moment and wait outside, Chuck. Coach White could accompany Mr. Travis and his associate out to reception, the yellow dean says, smiling into my unfocused eyes. Led to believe that this had all been ironed out in advance from the... CT is saying as he and DeLint are shown to the door. The tennis coach extends a hypertrophied arm. Athletics says, we're all friends and colleagues here. This is not working out. It strikes me that the exit signs would look to a native speaker of Latin like red-lit signs that says, he leaves. I would yield to the urge to bolt for the door ahead of them if I could know that bolting for the door is what the men in the room would see. DeLint is murmuring something to the tennis coach. Sounds of keyboards, phone consoles, as the door is briefly opened, then firmly shut. I am alone amid administrators. Offence intended to anyone, Athletic Affairs is saying, his sports coat tan and necktie insigniated to tiny print, beyond just physical abilities out there in play, which, believe me, we respect, won't, believe me, question about it, we wouldn't be so anxious to chat with you directly, see that we've known in processing several prior applications through Coach White's office that the Enfield School is operated, however impressively, by close relations of first your brother, who I still remember the way White's predecessor, Maori Clamkin, wooed that kid, so the grade's objectivity can all too easily be called into question by whosoever's calling. NAAUP, ill-willed Pac-10 programmes, ONANCAA. The essays are old ones, yes, but they are mine, de moi. But they are, yes, old, not quite on the application's instructed subject of most meaningful educational experience ever. If I'd done you one from last year, it would look like some sort of infant's random stabs at a keyboard, and to you, who uses whatsoever as a subject. And in the new, smaller company, the director of composition seems abruptly to have actuated, emerging as both the alpha of the pack here and way more effeminate than he seemed at first, standing hip-shot with a hand up to his waist, walking with a roll to his shoulders, jingling change as he pulls up his pants, as he slides into the chair still warm from CT's bottom, crossing his legs in a way that inclines him well into my personal space, so that I can see multiple eyebrow ticks and capillary webs in the oysters below his eyes and smell fabric softener and the remains of a breath mint turned sour. A bright, solid, but very shy boy. We know about your being very shy. Kirk White's told us that you're athletically built, if rather standoffish, younger instructor told him. The director says softly, cupping what I feel to be a hand over my sports coat. Sports coat's bicep? Surely not. Who simply needs to swallow hard and trust and tell his side of the story to these gentlemen who bear no maliciousness, none at all, but are doing our jobs and trying to look out for everyone's interests at the same time. I can picture De Lint and White sitting with their elbows on their knees in that defecatory posture of all athletes at rest. De Lint staring at his huge thumbs, while CT in the reception area in a tight ellipse speaking into his portable phone. I have been coached for this like a don before a Rico hearing. A neutral and effectless silence. The sort of all defensive game shit used to have me play. The best defense. Let everything bounce off you. Do nothing. I'll tell you all you want and more if the sounds I made could be what you could hear. Athletics with his head out from under his wing. To avoid admissions procedure that could be seen as primarily athletics orientated, it could be a mess, son. Bill means the appearance, not necessarily the true facts of the matter, which you alone can fill in, says the director of composition. The appearance of the high athletic ranking, the subnormal scores, the over-academic essays, the incredible grades vortexing out of what could be seen as a nepotistic situation. The yellow dean has leaned so far forward that his tie is going to have a horizontal dent from the table edge, his face sallow and kindly, and no shit whatever. Look here, Mr. Incandenza, Hal, please, just explain to me why we couldn't be accused of using you, son. Why nobody could come and say to us, why, look here, University of Arizona, here you are, using a boy for just his body, a boy so shy and withdrawn he won't speak up for himself, a jock with doctored marks and a store-bought application. The Brewster angle light, the tabletop, appears now as a rose flush behind my closed lids. I cannot make myself understood. I am not just a jock, I say, slowly, distinctly. My transcript for the last year might have been dickered a bit, maybe, but that was to get me over a rough spot. The grades prior to that are de moi. My eyes are closed. The room is silent. I cannot make myself understood now. I am speaking slowly and distinctly. Call it something I ate. It's funny what you don't recall. Our first home in a suburb of Weston, which I barely remember. My eldest brother Oren says he can remember being in the home's backyard with my mother in the early spring, helping the moms till some sort of garden out of the cold yard. March or early April. The garden's area was a rough rectangle, laid out with popsicle sticks and twine. Orin was removing rocks and hard clod from the mom's path as she worked a rented rototiller, a wheelbarrow-shaped, gas-driven thing that roared and snorted and bucked, and he remembers seeming to propel the moms rather than vice versa. The mom's very tall and having to stoop painfully to hold on, her feet leaving drunken prints in the tilled earth. He remembers that in the middle of the tilling, I came tear-assing out of the door and into the backyard, wearing some sort of fuzzy red poo wear, crying, holding out something he said was really unpleasant looking in my upturned hand. He says I was around 5 and crying and was vividly red in the cold spring air. I was saying something over and over. He couldn't make it out until our mother saw me and shut down the tiller, ears ringing, and came over to see what I was holding out. This turns out to have been a large patch of mould. Oren posits from some dark corner of the Weston home basement, which was warm from the furnace and flooded every spring. The patch itself he describes as horrific. Darkly green, glossy, vaguely hirsute, speckled with parasitic fungal points of yellow, orange, red. Worse, They could see that the patch looked incomplete, gnawed on, and some of the nauseous stuff was smeared around my open mouth. Couldn't be more close to life. Smeared around my And some of the nauseous stuff was smeared around my open mouth. I ate this, was what I was saying. I held the patch out to the moms who had her contacts for the dirty, who had her contacts out for the dirty works, and at first, bending down, saw only her crying child, hand out, proffering, and in that most maternal of reflexes, she, who feared and loathed more than anything spoilage and filth, reached to take whatever her baby held out, as in how many used heavy Kleenexes, spit-back candies, wads of chewed-out gum, in how many theatres, airports, backseats, tournament lounges. O stood there, he says, hefting a cold clod, playing with the Velcro on his puffy coat, watching as the moms, bent down to me, hand-reaching, her lowered face with its prebiotic squint, suddenly stopped, froze, beginning to ID what it was I held out, countenancing evidence of oral contact with the same. He remembers her face as past describing, her outstretched hand, still rotor trembling, hung in the air before mine. I ate this, I said. Pardon me. O says he can only remember saying something caustic as he limboed a crick out of his back. He says he must have felt a terrible impending anxiety. The moms refused to ever go into the damp basement. I had stopped crying, he remembers, and simply stood there, the size and shape of a hydrant, in red PJs with attached feet, holding out the mould, seriously, like the report of some kind of audit. O says his memory diverges at this point, probably as a result of anxiety. In his first memory, the mom's path around the yard is a broad circle of hysteria. God, she calls out. Help, my son ate this, she yells, in Orin's second and more fleshed out recollection, yelling it over and over, holding the speckled patch aloft in a pincer of fingers, running around and around the garden's rectangle while O gasped at his first real sight of adult hysteria. Suburban neighbours' heads appeared in windows and over the fences, looking, O remembers me tripping up over the garden's laid out twine, getting up dirty, trying to follow. God, help! My son ate this! Help! She kept yelling, running a tight pattern just inside the square of string, and my brother Orin remembers noting how even in hysterical trauma, her flight lines were plumb, her footprints, Native American straight, her turns, inside the ideogram of string, crisp and martial, crying, my son ate this, help, and lapping me twice before the memory recedes. My application's not bought, I am telling them, calling into the darkness of the red cave that opens out before closed eyes. I am not just a boy who plays tennis. I have an intricate history, experiences and feelings. I'm complex. I read, I say. I study and read. I bet I've read everything you've read. Don't think I haven't. I consume libraries. I wear out spines and ROM drives. I do things like get in a taxi and say, the library, and step on it. My instincts concerning syntax and mechanics are better than your own, I can tell, with due respect. But it transcends mechanics. I'm not a machine. I feel and believe. I have opinions. Some of them are interesting. I could, if you'd let me, talk and talk. Let's talk about anything. I believe the influence of Kierkegaard on Camus is underestimated. I believe Dennis Gabor may very well have been the Antichrist. I believe Hobbes is just Rousseau in a dark mirror. I believe, with Hegel, that transcendence is absorption. I could interface you guys right under the table, I say. I'm not just the creators, manufactured, conditioned, bred for a function. I open my eyes. Please don't think I don't care. I look out. Directed my way is horror. I rise from the chair. I see jowls sagging, eyebrows high on trembling foreheads, cheeks bright white. The chair recedes below me. Sweet Mother of Christ, the director says. I'm fine, I tell them, standing. From the Yellowsdene expression, there's a brutal wind blowing in my direction. Academic's face has gone instantly old. 8 eyes have become blank discs that stare at whatever they see. Good God, whispers Athletics. Please don't worry, I say. I can explain. I soothe the air with a casual hand. Both my arms are pinioned from behind by the director of composition, who wrestles me roughly down on me with all his weight. I taste floor. What's wrong? I say, nothing is wrong. It's all right, I'm here, the director is calling into my ear. Get help, cries Adine. My forehead is pressed into parquet I never knew could be so cold. I am arrested. I try to be perceived as limp and pliable. My face is mashed flat. Composition's weight tries to makes it very hard to breathe. Try to listen, I say very slowly, muffled on by the floor. What in God's name are these? One Dean cries shrilly. Those sounds. There are the clicks of a phone console's buttons, shoes, heels moving, pivoting, a sheaf of flimsy papers falling. God, help! The door's base opens at the left periphery. A wedge of halogen hall light, white sneakers, and a scuffed nun bush. Let him up! That's the limp. There is nothing wrong, I say slowly to the floor. I'm in here. I'm raised by the crutches of my underarms, shaken towards what he must see as calm by a purple-faced director. Get a grip, son! The lint at the big man's arm. Stop it! I am not what you see and hear. Distant silence. A crude half Nelson forms at the door. A young Hispanic woman holds her palm against her mouth, looking. I'm not, I say.